This is not exactly a thing that we really like to talk about. I don't think anybody really enjoys being disappointed. And just to say this up front, all of us have disappointed someone else at some point in life. We know this. We would like to think that we really don't do that, but we do. Either breaking promises that we've made, or just, you know, it could be not meeting someone's expectations, not even knowing what they are. In my experience of life as a preacher, I don't know what it is, but it happens where people just get mad at me, and I'm like, okay, what have I done? And then they fill in the blanks finally, and you're like, well, you never told me that. You never said that you expected this from me or expected this. And I've actually had a couple of them tell it, well, you should know. No, I shouldn't know. I can't read minds. I barely do my own mind, you know? But in all seriousness, it's a hard thing, because what can happen is disappointment can grow into discouragement, or we've had enough. When I was a young preacher, an older preacher friend, he was more of a frenemy. He was a guy that kind of stirred things up wherever he went, and he was with us for a couple years and pretty well behaved himself, I think. But as we were moving, he basically said, you can be disappointed in brethren, but never get discouraged. And he just kind of said it that way. And I don't know what he meant by that, other than maybe he thought that I felt disappointment or was maybe just giving unsolicited advice. But it was good advice, because I think it is right. Being disappointed, it's par for the human course. I mean, it's one of these things. We deal with disappointment, and how we deal with it is going to ensure whether we continue with God or not. And I think this is part of it. We see people who identify as Christians, followers, disciples, and they're not perfect. And we get disappointed. We may even get angry with them. And we may feel at some point we just can't put up with it anymore. Well, again, we've all disappointed other people. And we need to remember that, partly. Partly we need to remember it's not the Lord that we're really supposed to take this out on. A friend of mine years ago asked this question out of the blue. Would you jump out of a plane just because you're sitting next to somebody who doesn't believe in flying? And I'm like, no, I would not. Obviously, that would be harmful for me. He's like, exactly. So why do people leave the church? Well, because they're mad at somebody. You know, someone said something to them in a way they didn't like or may have just taken offense at. Many years ago, there was a congregation that I worked with that there was an expectation, and finally somebody told me this, that everybody, all the men, expected to have a handshake. Everybody. It's just what they did. I'm the sort of person, I'm not big on handshakes. I understand the importance of it, but I don't like touching everybody. And I don't know how else to say it. That's my problem. So, long story real short, a guy got really mad at me because I apparently, in the line of men as I was shaking hands, missed him. Come to find out, he was standing somewhat behind to test me. And he told me this later. He was testing me. And I'm like, why? He goes, I just wanted to see if you'd shake my hand. And I'm like, if your hand isn't out and there's a line of... I mean, why? I don't know. He told me he was so disappointed. And I said, well, I'm disappointed in you for being dumb. I mean, come on. But we all do this at some point. We just get out of sorts. And we don't... you know, express why we're out of sorts. We're just out of sorts. And then when finally we say something, it does sound kind of dumb out loud, almost always. I know for myself that's happened, where I'm like, say out loud what I'm thinking and why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, and it's like, yeah, it is kind of dumb. To have that expectation, to not express it, and then be upset about that, right? So, as I would say here, the difference between disappointment and discernment, this is essentially a Google definition. I typed in, what is the difference between disappointment and discouragement? And they did not dissatisfy. Disappointment is a temporary letdown and sadness. Discouragement is when multiple disappointments have led to despair and hopelessness. That's pretty good. I like that. I think that's probably accurate. Because we kind of do that. We let one disappointment build up to another one, to another one, to another one. And we may even come to a conclusion that everybody's just out to disappoint us. We may never say that, but we kind of feel like no one can satisfy us. And if we do feel that no one can satisfy us, it's probably not other people. It's probably us with such high expectations, maybe. I think we need to choose to look for what's good. Philippians 4:8, you know. Meditate on these things is what Paul says, whatever things are true and righteous, you know, those things. He would say earlier in Philippians 2:14 that we're to do all things without grumbling or disputing, but that's just not humanity. Humanity likes to find things to complain about. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons social media is so popular is it's a place where we can all just complain. I know the other day I complained about a pet peeve of mine in traffic where people come to the red light and they creep and they creep and they creep and they creep. I hate that. And then when the light turns green, they just sit there. I don't know why have they been creeping and then the light turns green. And then I honk and then they get mad. It's like, really? Well, that's just life. But we like to complain. We really do. And God is actually telling us, don't complain. And we need to learn how to not complain. Not everybody's out to get us. Not everybody, and I've known people like this. We probably all have. Maybe we have seen that in ourselves where we get a feeling like everybody's just out to get us some way, somehow. And I don't think that's true. I think sometimes we're looking too hard. We're expecting too much. I know I've heard people say that. We're just expecting too much. Yeah, sometimes we are. We expect more out of others than we do ourselves. Jesus, and we'll talk about this here in a minute or two. We'll bring it up now. Why not? In Luke 6, verse 31, which is the parallel to Matthew 7, verse 12, what we call the golden rule. It's not in the Bible called the golden rule. People have come up with that. But it's a good thing. Wish, or as you wish that others would do to you, so do to them. In the apocryphal, it's stated in a negative way. If you don't want someone to do this to you, then don't do that to them. Jesus puts it in a positive. As you want other people to do things to you, do that to them. We need not be so critical of others. Sometimes people are doing their very best, and it may not be we're impressed with it, but they're doing their best. And that's kind of the point I think sometimes we need to stress in our own minds. 2 Timothy 2:22, Paul wrote to Timothy to flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. But notice that word pursue. When we understand something as being a pursuit, it changes things. You know, if someone says, hey, do you know where my keys are? We're like, no, we don't. Okay. Well, I need to leave like now. Then you have a pursuit. You know, you look till you find. You tear the world up looking for your keys. And the last place you look is where you find them, you know? Pursue. The word dioko in Greek means to hunt, to chase. Now, I think for many of us, if we think about hunting is more of a voluntary thing you go do. Not because you have to go hunt for food, it's because you like to go outside and spend some time in the woods. A lot of the people I've known who hunt don't hunt for any other reason than the sport of it. It's not to them a necessity. But that's the word that's being used here, to hunt, pursue righteousness, which means we're hunting it because it is a necessity. That's really the point that is made with that word. And I know that there are, and there's just a reality of unmet expectations. We all have them. We all don't express clearly everything that we want. Disappointment comes when we have expectations, they go unmet. Maybe we don't express our expectations and people can't read our minds, even though we might expect that they will. It's also possible that our expectations aren't realistic. I've known people like that who have an expectation. It's like, well, do you expect that of yourself? Well, no. Well, then why are you expecting that of me? The double standard. We all do this. We expect others to maybe hold the door open for us. We never hold the door open for anybody else. Or the handshaking thing. You got the guy who's critical of people who don't handshake when he doesn't do it himself. Okay, that doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. Or it may just be and this happened to me recently. I had someone who was upset with me, and I say upset, it's a strong word. They weren't happy. And as they were expressing unmet expectations, I was like, you know, everything you're saying, it's what an elder should do, and I'm not an elder. And if I were doing those things, I think some of them would probably get mad because I'm trying to maybe exert myself as an elder. I'm not an elder. Those are things I don't do. And I don't want people to mistake as a preacher. I think, you know, it does happen. Preachers do fill in an authoritative role. They do. And it can be very easy to kind of exert that a little bit more than you should. I probably could be criticized. I'd be critical of myself. Sometimes I know I pull back deliberately because I don't want to be misunderstood as trying to insert myself in a way that I don't have that role. I don't have that right. I'm not an overseer. I'm not an elder. So I don't have that. But this person was critical because I wasn't doing those things. And I said, well, I'm not an elder. And they're like, oh, I thought you were. No, I'm not. I'm old, you know, but I'm not an elder. I don't fulfill God's qualifications in 1 Timothy 3. So there you are. We disappoint others. I've said that. Others disappoint us. We disappoint ourselves. We can't allow disappointment to grow into discouragement, which is on us. Sometimes it's because we focus on something, and we just can't stop focusing. You know, if I told you don't think about a pink elephant, what's the thing that comes to your brain? I told you not to think about a pink elephant. At some point in the last few seconds have been thinking about a pink elephant. Well, sometimes when we focus on something, or maybe we focus on someone, and we're like, they disappoint us. Now that's all we can think of. Is that the golden rule in action? No, not at all. And I think if we really do have a problem with someone, just like Jesus says, and yet what Jesus is talking about is not just if you have a problem with someone. He says if your brother sins against you, not just he offends you because he told a joke you don't like, you know? You've had that happen. You all had that happen. You tell something that somebody else is like, I didn't like that joke. That's not when you pull somebody aside and rebuke them for telling a bad joke that you just didn't like. When they sin against you, Jesus says you go to them and tell them their fault. And if they listen to you, you've won your brother. If not, that's where you take two or three brothers to establish every word and then go on from there. But I think sometimes we're a little quick on pulling the trigger of just letting other people know what's on our mind when it may not be that really, not just a big deal. It's not that important, really. It's not. 5 years from now, is this going to be that important that I didn't shake your hand using that example? No, it's not. So that's something I remember growing up with. My grandfather would tell me sometimes. He would just say, look, in a couple years, is this going to matter? I'd call him and be upset. And he'd go, in 2 years, you think this is something you're going to be upset about? No. Well, then just let it go. That's the only way you can do it. Just let it go. Let's turn to Matthew 23. And one of the points I want to make tonight is as we consider some of these things is think about Jesus. I guarantee you, Jesus met disappointment. And if Jesus let disappointment become discouragement, you can think of the statement he makes the night that he is betrayed. Not just that somebody upset him a little bit by not shaking his hand or something, but that he was betrayed by Judas. And he tells Peter, I can call 12 legions of angels. Jesus did not get to that point of discouragement. And we need to kind of think about that. This is Matthew 23. And as I have in front of you, 29 through 39, this is in the great chapter where he rebukes the scribes and the Pharisees for their hypocrisy. He calls them hypocrites 7 times, just keeps telling them, you're hypocrites. And so in verse 29 and reading through to the end of the chapter here, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You build the tombs of the prophets and decorate the monuments of the righteous, saying, oh, if we lived in those days, we would not have taken part with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. And so you're a witness against yourselves that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your fathers. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how are you to escape being sentenced to hell? Therefore, I send you prophets and wise men and scribes, some of whom you'll kill and crucify, and some you will flog in your synagogues and persecute from town to town, so that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel. And yeah, we're talking in the book of Genesis, Abel, to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah. We're not as familiar with that guy, but he is in 2 Chronicles, executed basically. This is Jesus' way of saying from the beginning of the Old Testament to the end of the Old Testament. Because the Hebrew Old Testament started with Genesis and ended with 2 Chronicles. And that's exactly how it is here. That's why sometimes we don't get the reference, because he's using in his mind the Hebrew Bible and where it started, where it ended. But he says, you murder between the sanctuary and the altar. Truly, I say to you, all these things are going to come on this generation. But notice, the tone is very hard, but then he softens it up a little, verse 37 through 39. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I would have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you weren't willing. See, your house is left desolate. For I tell you, you'll not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Could Jesus say this and not be disappointed? I mean, there was an expectation for the Jews to get this. I mean, this is the argument Paul makes in Romans, especially like chapter 3. What advantage is it to be a Jew? And he says much in every way because of the oracles of God. You got that. The rest of the world didn't get that. The Jews should have been looking for Messiah. They should have been anticipating, and they weren't. When Jesus showed up, it's like, we don't want him. We don't want him at all. Talk about disappointment. How do you think Jesus must have felt when he came to the earth, was able to read people's thoughts, actually read people's thoughts? In Mark 3, you might remember the man with the withered hand. And Jesus on the Sabbath, this was the whole thing. The Pharisees were so upset with Jesus because he did things on the Sabbath. And he's like, the Sabbath was designed to help man. Man wasn't built to serve the Sabbath. They had it all backward. And he wanted to know, was it good or bad to heal somebody on the Sabbath? And nobody dared answer because they knew what he was getting ready to do. And we're told by Mark that he looked around at them grieved and angry. I don't know about you, that would be hard. Grieved and angry. He could have just zapped them all into judgment right there and then, but he doesn't. He heals the man, and he goes on. In Mark 14, verse 50, we could talk a lot about what Jesus met as disappointment. We're actually told this, Mark 14, verse 50, that they all, this is his apostles, every single one of them, I would say even Judas, because Judas, you know, he betrays the Lord. I don't think he stuck around to see what all was going to happen exactly. But we're told that they all left him and fled. Mark is probably the one, he may not be, but he's probably the one, that, because he's the only one of the gospel accounts that mentions a young man who flees naked. It's like they grabbed him and he just wiggled his way out of his clothing, you know, like a bathrobe is what he'd wear, and he goes off. A lot of commentaries have said Mark's the only one that mentions it. It very well could have been Mark who did that. Well, that means this is how desperate he was to flee. And he went naked. He tore out of there. Yeah, that was exciting. All right, so let's look at verses 26 through 31. Sorry, I didn't have my glasses on to see what I was putting there. In Mark 14, and I want to read again, like I said, verse 26 through 31, because this is insightful. All of them flee. All of them leave. And if you pick it up at verse 26, you read on what's going on here. There we go. When they had sung a hymn, we're told they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus tells them all, you will all fall away. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. But after I am raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter said, even though they all fall away, I will not. This sounds like Peter. Peter's like, yeah, everybody else is going to mess up on this, but not me. I don't know how this is conveyed exactly. Did Jesus say this in a hushed tone? Was it more direct? You know, I think of things like this. But Jesus says, truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. And Peter replied emphatically, we're told, if I must die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said the same. They all agreed, we're not going to deny you. They're not us. We wouldn't do that, ever. Peter kind of led the charge. Jesus has just said, you're going to deny me before the night's over. And the night doesn't mean just darkness, but just before the sun rises, really, is the point. you will deny me. Oh, I'll die for you. I'm not going to deny him. And John actually tells us that when Peter, the third time, took up a curse, I don't know the man, that they, that is Peter and Jesus, made eye contact. And that's when Peter goes and weeps bitterly, flees and weeps bitterly. It's just, it's a devastating scene. Because Peter knew exactly what had come to pass and what had been told of him. Do you think Jesus may have had a disappointing look in his eyes? Absolutely. Jesus has met disappointment even to the point that he was crucified. Why? It had nothing to do with anything that he had done or said. He was a perfect person. I like Mark Twain a lot. Mark Twain is the one that I've read this a few times, that there's only been one perfect person and we got him. That's the way he puts it. We did. As a humanity, we got that guy. We killed him. We nailed him to a cross. There's nothing that put Jesus on that cross except his love and the anger of man. It is at the cross that we meet God's best and man's worst. And it's an amazing thought that, yes, I would say Jesus, and even in the moment with his apostle Peter, was disappointed. But he didn't say, you know what, I call it quits. This is it. I'm going to call these 12 legions of angels, clean this thing up, and move on. And he could have done it, and he could have been justified in doing it. We call it righteous indignation. It's not a biblical thought, but I understand the idea we're trying to convey, that we're right to be angry. Jesus had every right to be angry, but he didn't do that. And we need to learn from his example. It doesn't mean it's an easy example. It's exactly what we want. Paul. Did Paul ever meet disappointment? All right. In 2 Timothy 4, verses 9 through 11, we read, and this is Paul's last letter. He writes, "Make every effort to come to me quickly, because Demas, in love with this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone off to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me." And a few verses later, verse 16 through 18, "At my first defense, no one stood with me." I don't know about you, Paul is an enigmatic sort of figure to me to some degree, because he is a champion of the faith. But I don't know that he had a whole bunch of friends who were there at the right time. Obviously, as he writes to Timothy, he says, "At my first defense, the first time this all happened, I had no one with me. Everyone deserted me." Just like Jesus was deserted, Mark 14, 50. He says, "May it not be charged against him, but the Lord stood by me and strengthened me, so that through me the message would be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles would hear it. So I was delivered from the mouth of the lion," which may be literal, actually. I don't know that he's saying in some sort of a spiritualized way, an allegory. I think he literally means he was saved by the mouth of the lion, and the Lord will rescue me from every evil action and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. But this whole paragraph ends really well, but it starts off with, "The first time I went through this, I had nobody with me." In the same context, he says, "The only one who's with me right now is Luke." And we think Luke's there for two primary reasons. One, Luke was a doctor, so he may have very well served as a personal physician to Paul and may have helped some of the other prisoners, and maybe to help write. 2 Timothy is a Lucan book, by the way. It very much fits into the Greek of Luke, and it's not a far stretch to think Luke may have been the person writing rather than Paul writing. Paul may have just spoken the word and Luke wrote it down. I came across this, a week or two ago, and I thought it was probably right. McDonald's gets our order wrong, and we still go back. You know, I'm not a big McDonald's fan. Used to be. I've got myself in dietary trouble for that, you know. The problem I probably have to deal with most is sodium. You talk about sodium, you can't eat hardly anything from McDonald's without it having about a half of what you're supposed to have every day, you know, in sodium. That's just, you know, that's the reality. But what? If we get our order wrong, we go back. I mean, it's not like we've said, "I've never gone back to whatever restaurant." You don't like McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, whatever. You don't like any of them, Pollo Tropical. I've gotten my order wrong, I go back. But then what happens? Someone in church gets something wrong, and we're never coming back. I mean, I've had people just, I'm never coming back. Why? What would happen? What was the thing that happened? And it's not always unserious. Sometimes it is serious. Someone has done something that really is wrong. You can't say all of it's not wrong. There is some wrong. But that's where Matthew 18 comes. It's hard. It's not an easy thing when you know somebody has done something to hurt you for you to just let it go. But that's not even what Jesus says. He says, you go and talk to that person. Don't go talk about him. Go talk to him. And if he listens, then you've gained your brother. That's not an easy thing to do on either side of that. I know the traffic thing. Thinking about these kind of things, do we stop driving because traffic is bad? I mean, like you read here, I'm disappointed almost every day while driving in the South Florida crazy. I mean, you know, all of us have stories. Have we ever done the disappointing thing? I have. I've pulled out in front of people, not really thinking about it. You know, sometimes it's hard. I just say this. When you got three lanes of traffic coming in at you and you're in the turn lane, you want to go. You're in a hurry, right? What do? Well, you look for a little, and then you just kind of go. And then that car honks and waves their arms. I did that one time a few years ago to a policeman. Didn't know it was a cop. I just saw a car, and I thought, hey, I'm just going to get out. I'm going to get out. As soon as I did, lights everywhere, you know. He didn't pull me over. His point was, you know, I'm here, don't do this. I could make your life miserable right now, you know. I waved at him, he waved back. Everything was funny and laughing, and I'm like, oh my word, you know. Well, it happens. We need thicker skin. And I'm not saying, again, you just ignore things. I don't think that's the right thing, because if you ignore it, it's going to build up. You just can't do that. What we need is a couple other things. In Matthew 24:12, Jesus said this, because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. And I think we're kind of living in a time that evil is increasing. It's growing. And there's no way to say, I don't, you know, no, it's not. Yeah, it is. It's an ebb and flow. We're right now kind of in a flow. I don't think it's the ebb. Ebb means it's going back. It's flowing right now. And Jesus says most people's, he doesn't say some people's, most people's love will grow cold. And so we need to exercise that golden rule. The way we want other people to treat us is the way we need to treat them. That's not easy. We know the passage in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. And this is it. We need love. It's easy to say that, but it's a hard thing to exercise, the divine love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, love is patient. I think part of it sometimes with disappointment is just not being so quick on the draw. You know, just if someone says something that maybe we don't even hear it fully, just, excuse me, Ed, can you say that again? Or what do you mean? Communication, that kind of thing. Love is patient, love is kind. Love does not envy or boast, it is not arrogant or rude. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I have it on two different pieces of paper here. It does not insist on its own way. I think that's part of what we're talking about tonight. Love does not insist on its own way. What do we say sometimes? My way or the highway? Yeah. Sounds pretty tough, but what we're saying to somebody is, I don't care what you think. It's my way or the highway. Love does not insist on its own way. Now, I know immediately you may think, well, God's insisting on his own way. He's God. I mean, there is a huge difference between dealing with somebody else and dealing with God. God is God. He's going to judge us all, and he's going to judge justly. He's not going to judge based on what we look like, based on whether he likes us or not. He is going to judge perfect judgment. Love is not irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrongdoing. It rejoices with the truth. It bears all things, believes, hopes, endures all things. Love never ends. I think this is one of the most difficult passages in the Bible because it's hard to put our name there and say, yeah, this is who I am. Jesus, if you replace the word love with the name Jesus, it fits perfectly. There's no way to say it doesn't. Putting our own name there, it might be some things. We might be able to say so-and-so is patient and kind. I can't even get that far personally. But it may be some other things, you know, you can do better than others. But all I'm saying is, we're going to be disappointed. And in life, I think this is one of the troubles that we find going on in society. People don't know how to deal with disappointment, and they overreact. I'm not saying this is the answer as to why there's so much violence in our society, but it does contribute. Children aren't raised to figure out how to deal with being disappointed. Things don't work out the way they want them to. Some people don't know how to deal with it, and they want to hurt people. Where did that come from? It comes from Satan, you know, essentially. It's easy to say that, but it's demonic thinking. I can't have my way. I'm gonna take it out on everybody. Even innocent people have nothing to do with it because I'm angry. Okay? We're going to be disappointed. It may be right now you're feeling disappointed. It may be that you're saying, I don't feel that way right now, but you're going to be. And you're going to be a disappointment to someone at some time. Just like we want them to treat us nicely, kindly, patiently, we need to be that way to them. And that's my admonition. I know things don't always work out the way we want them to, and that is life. But we've got to trust God. In life, I've learned, I sound like an old man right now, I've learned, you know, that in life, there is an ebb and flow with most everything. There are times when things are going really well, and there are times when they're not. When things are going really well, I know we'd like for them just to continue, and they don't, because that's not life. But even the bad times, even the times of disappointment, not discouragement, disappointment, where things just, we don't like the way they're going, they're not going to continue that way forever. That's just reality. I know when we're in the position, feeling the disappointment for all kinds of different reasons, even justified reasons, it's not going to stay this way. It will change. My suggestion, very practically, would be grow love, pray, ask God for help in all this. Remember Jesus. Remember what he went through. He was alone. They fled from him. His disciples, Peter, who said, it's not going to happen. I'll die for you. I will not deny you. And then he denies him. We've all played the part of Peter. And we probably all played the part of Judas to Jesus. As far as being a betrayer, someone who's just turning him in, if you will. The point I'm making is that Jesus' patience, his love toward us, is what is going to save us in the end. And we need to be that way ourselves. It's not an easy task. It's not a 3-step process. It's not even a 5 or 10 step. It may be hundreds of steps as far as that goes. But we've got to do it for our own sanity to some degree, but also to help other people. I will say this, because James reminds us in James 1 that the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. And I know in my life, every time I've gotten angry, it has done no good. Ever. And so you've got to be mindful of, you know, how disappointment can breed into discouragement. You might blow up. Great, what have you done? You've not helped anything right there. It doesn't change anything for the good. Everybody just knows you're really angry. You got to change. And isn't that what the gospel is? The first word of the gospel is repent. The song that Andrew has chosen for us, let him have his way with you. It's not what we want, it's what God wants. This is what Jesus prayed in the garden. Not my will, but yours be done. And this should be, as Christians, our own attitude. We're going to be tested, maybe even tested soon, sooner than later. We've got to let God help us through this. And again, exercise that golden rule. Treat other people the way we would like to be treated. Tonight, if you've not been baptized, you've not started this journey with God, you need to be born again of water and spirit, as Jesus told Nicodemus. Jesus, you know, again, as he was interacting with the disciples, they disappointed him, but he was pretty eager to get back with them. And I think that's one of the lessons we could learn, too, is when someone does say sorry, we need to be responsive to that, not hold it over him. Let him have his way with thee. If there's anybody tonight that has a desire to either, you know, come forward in repentance or to be baptized, right now is the time. Come forward.